kpi.org.
And thanks for joining Disability and Progress, where we bring you insights into ideas about and discussions on disability topics. My name is Sam. I'm the host of this show. Thanks so much for joining me. Charlene Dahl is my PR research person. Hello, Charlene.
Good evening, everyone, from the cold north.
Aaron is my podcaster. I think Aaron ran away to some places warmer, although... what's warmer? I'm not sure now since it's been a whole shakeup. So we'll just call it the Great White North Show. So thank you so much for tuning in. Just a little bit of housekeeping. If you want to be on my email list, you can email me at disabilityandprogress@samjasmine.com. That's disabilityandprogress@samjasmine.com. And we can put you on our emailer. No addresses are shared, but you will find out what's coming on each week or most weeks, and you will also be able to be in the know about any other things happening at KFAI. So feel free to do that. Meanwhile, happiest of New Year's for those of you who are still celebrating the New Year. And this week we're speaking with author Polly Montgomery and co-author Sydney Montgomery and Polly's mom, and also friend of Polly, Adam Molina. And they are talking about autism and also the book that has, I think, just been released called My Friend's Autism. So I just want to say welcome, everybody.
Here.
Excellent. All right. Thanks so much for giving me your time, you guys. I appreciate that. And what a great book. I want to start out by, can you give me just, for those, I think most people have a really wide idea of what autism is, or they have their thoughts. But what is your definition of autism?
You want me to go first?
No, I could go.
Okay.
Well, autism is a spectrum disorder, which means some people learn differently from others. Go on.
Oh, when I think of autism, I think of processing.
Processing.
Every individual with autism is different, but I think the one common thread is that they all process in a different way. For example, when Polly learns something, he needs a couple hours to process it. So if he had a pop quiz, he would fail. But if he had the quiz a couple hours later, he would get an A+.
Excellent. Uh-huh. All right.
And the social skills, mm-hmm. of course, is a challenge for a lot of people with autism. Mm.
Uh-huh. Sinia, when did you first discover, I presume Polly was quite young when you discovered he was autistic. Can you talk about how that came about?
Sure. He didn't speak a lot, but my nephew didn't speak a lot, so we were not very concerned. It takes some people longer than others. And after a while, we realized that there was something different, but we didn't know. We knew nothing about autism. So we went to Northwestern University and spoke with some speech and language people there, and they said he had something called sensory processing disorder, recommended him to a speech therapist, and we went there. And then he had, they called it something else, something integration disorder. I've forgotten, it was so long ago. And then finally, the educational psychologist that worked with him and tested him and assessed him said that he had autism. And so he was around, what, 4 or 5, I think.
Yeah.
And I was so relieved because I felt like, okay, well, now this is something we can
understand. Had a name. You had a name for it.
Yeah.
So what?
Now they have different levels. Now they have level 1.
Yes. Yeah.
Really, why? Because it seems weird to kind of label people, but maybe it's helpful. I don't know.
Well, I wonder too if it helped, or if it does help some people at least have an expectation of, okay, this is what it is. Now, how do I work with it? What do we do? What kind of things were going on that made you think that there was something going on?
Well, I think the main thing was the language, and he loved to point. He would point and say ceiling light and square light and noodle for Mr. Noodle, Sesame Street. He also loved inanimate objects. Like, he loved the vacuum. He would push that thing around like a friend. And when we went out into the world, he just would scream and lay on the floor.
Aww.
And he could not handle a lot of, like, the Home Depot or Walgreens. It was too much. I didn't know this at the time, but it was a lot of visual stimulation and a lot of noise and a lot of lights. And so I think it was just kind of a feeling. I don't think we really had any one thing. It was just a feeling of, we better double check this.
So you have two kids now that are grown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in their 20s.
But I presume that parenting, you almost had to split differences with parenting your kids in different ways.
Yeah, this is a fascinating question, and it's not an easy one to answer. But because we have, you know, limited time, I kind of feel like I want to answer it in two parts.
Okay, so let's do it.
Raising Polly and my other son, who's 4 years younger, right? 4 years younger?
Three and a half.
Okay. Was the most challenging because Polly required a lot of my time and attention in order to survive. He would run across parking lots. He would run across busy roads. He ran to the highway one time.
Oh.
So we were always on what I call, you know, red alert. It was a matter of life and death, literally. And because of that, I spent less time with Jay. Mm. And Jay, my son, other son, grew up thinking I didn't care as much about him, as much as I said, like, you know, I love you just as much. And
right.
I tried to explain it in words. I tried to explain it in actions. And it never really stuck until he got older. And I think that was my biggest challenge. You know, we tried to have a lot of people surround him. Our very good friend, Berta, would say, "You're the best," all the time with Jay. She was really a second mom to him. We were very lucky to have that. But I think that was the biggest challenge, is to split the survival. I mean, that you have to prioritize that. So I think that's a really important thing for a lot of people to know, is that it's not helicopter parenting.
No.
And it's not favoritism.
No.
It's making sure they don't drown or get hit by a car or run into the highway. So that was one part. And the other part is the world around us. And what made it different for me as a parent was, most of the time, I mean, Polly and Jay, they were a joy to raise. They were very close. And we just had a lot of fun. But the world around us reacted to us in either a weird way or cruel or ignorant. Like, it was very difficult to see when Polly would get kicked out of preschools. He would sit in the closet and they'd say, "We can't handle this." And they were so mean. One administrator in a school called the DCFS to report me because he wasn't coming in enough. And I said, "Well, he's going to yoga in the morning, which really sets him up for a much better day." And all she cared about was federal funding. And that really was very challenging. And when we lived in Evanston, he didn't really have a lot of friends, not as much as when we moved to Park Ridge, Illinois. And him not having a lot of friends was a shock because he was so fun. And so I think that's the biggest challenge. Autism isn't the biggest challenge. The biggest challenge is the world's reaction to autism. And that's what we're hoping to minimize. We're hoping to educate people and make them aware that this is not as intimidating or scary, or, you know, you don't have to feel that awkward. It's just something that's, you know, it's like, it's a difference.
It is interesting that Jay and Polly were close, since you did have to parent very differently, and I'm sure that Jay felt it. And so I feel like that sometimes can be a wedge between siblings, but it seems that he didn't hold a grudge, or if he did, he learned how to deal with that.
Yeah, no, he was born a man's man. He was all about Polly, then he was all about Dad, and I came a very, very late third.
Oh. Well, you were the one who did a lot of work. It sounds like you did a lot of work. And I did,
and I was very lucky because my husband worked so hard that I could afford to spend all that time with him. And we had a lot of financial support from my in-laws. And so I know that not everybody has that.
Right.
So I'm being mindful of talking to people because, you know, everybody doesn't have the same resources. Everybody's child with autism is different. So it's you can never assume anything. You just really have to listen when I talk to people, because sometimes I'll tell people that ask me questions and they say, oh, my neighbor wants to call you. And so I talk to strangers a lot on the phone, and I really just try to listen more than anything. And it's kind of funny, I don't want to be mean, but most of the people that I've talked to that I've never met have the main difficulty is the mother-in-law. But the mother-in-law just doesn't believe anything's wrong. They believe that we're wrong and we're bad parents. And, you know, what I say to people, when you have anybody that you love and are close to that doesn't understand, it's extremely difficult. And you can try to explain, but at some point you just have to let it go.
Mm. Yeah.
You have to say they'll probably never really get it, and that's okay.
And Polly, I'm curious, that you talk a lot in your book about your years in school. In fact, I think you do a fabulous job with breaking it down and kind of going through your preschool years a little bit, but your elementary years and your junior high years, which, by the way, if you were miserable in junior high, really, I think all kids that go into junior high are sort of subhuman. So you should totally not feel bad about that. I have two children as well, and it took a while before I thought my child was human going through those years. And then you talk about your high school years, and I'm curious, like, if you could choose your school years that were the probably some of the best school years, what would they be and why?
Well, I think they'd probably be middle school years, because freshman year of football in high school, first semester, because, you know, I met, you know, a lot of friends through school and sports, and I tried different things, and when I was on the football team 1 year, I felt like, you know, I got to be around with my friends, you know, all the time, hanging out with them and playing, you know, on the same team together. And it was very fun. for me, you know, to have that experience. But I didn't have the second half of freshman year and all through sophomore year when I went away to school was very difficult for me. It was just insane.
Yeah, so in your book you talk about going to a small private school. Can you talk a little bit about this and how it did it help you at all? What was the reason for doing that?
It helped me education-wise. Education-wise, it helped me, but the social part didn't do so well.
Mm. What do you feel like they could have done better?
And the school closed.
Oh my.
they went bankrupt.
Aw, that might be a telling thing, huh?
Yeah, but, I mean, they're a foundation now down in Tennessee, in the Chattanooga area.
Cindy, as a parent, what were your thoughts when he went away to this school?
Well, for a long time, he said he wanted to be around horses and he wanted to be in a quiet space.
Mm-hmm.
And so we found the school through an educational consultant and thought, wow, this is going to be a great fit. He wasn't doing well in school because they weren't accommodating him.
Oh,
every time we went
a lot
in,
of those
I went
stories.
In almost every day. Mm. And they said, no. It was all land of no. And so it was affecting his behavior at home. I mean, he was not himself. You know, I say a lot, when you do well in school, then you do well socially. When you do well socially, you do well in school. You really
right.
have to have both. And so because he was working so hard to keep it together in high school that first year, the only thing he loved, and it was truly one of the best times of his life, was the football team. They didn't give him any accommodations trying out, and they didn't do anything differently for him than before, and he loved that. He loved being treated equally. But then when we sent him down there, what they said and what they did were two completely different things, and we have found that true for a lot of different schools and programs. The marketing says one thing, but the reality is quite different. And I ended up going down there and getting an apartment, and he ended up living with me for a while. But then we came back. When he came back, what, junior year, Polly?
Yeah.
The school said yes to everything. I think the school was really shaken that he left. And so there was somebody there named Barb, and she was amazing. She fixed everything, all the accommodations he needed and all the issues that he was having were just gone. So it's something they could have done from day one, and it would have been a lot better for us. But, you know, Polly and I are both used to it, that he's the guinea pig. People learn what to do and what not to do with him and then change.
You know, so I do want to speak to that a minute, because growing up, you know, I realized there was similarities there with me in the school system. And I can tell you that I do believe there is a turnaround time, because there was, I feel like there were years where you were supposed to be grateful for them giving you anything. And then came the land of lawsuit, or the land of more equal opportunity. And every student must be given more of an equal chance. And I feel like that's when a lot of schools turned around and actually said, you know, you get time and a half for tests, or you get, you know, X, Y, Z, and you need this special extra tutoring in the class. That's what you get. I feel like there was a definite time where it did switch and people were getting more than what they were used to getting.
That, and, you know, it really depends on what year. A lot of times people say, what's the best school? What's the best state? What's the best this, that, or the other thing? And it's really not, you can't get that. It's the best person that's in the school.
Mm.
And it's the best leader in the state, and things change all the time. So
right.
you could go to one school that's horrible, and the next year get a new teacher that's wonderful.
Right.
It's difficult to plan.
Yeah.
Especially with autism, because you want to have consistency.
Right.
When he was in elementary school, we looked at a school that was K through 8, and I had gone there, and it was small, and I thought it might be a good fit. And they said, well, we can't guarantee that he'll be in this school every year. Oh. It depends on how many students there are with special education needs. So he could have been at that school 1 year and then gone to another school another year and then gone back to the school the third year and then gone to a new school the fourth. Like, there were, you know, about 10 different schools, and every year he could have gone to a different school.
Yeah, that would not have helped.
We couldn't do that, yeah.
Paula, you, in your book, you really talk about loving and valuing sports when you were growing up and in school. And do you feel like that is something that helped you be more social and develop social skills?
It did. For me, I thought, you know, that it developed a lot of courage for me, you know, to get out there and be active and stay put, you know, with a bunch of group of friends, you know, that helped me too.
Mm-hmm. It started with rowing, didn't it? You want to talk about the rowing, Polly?
Oh yeah, I rowed for the rowing organization, for the rowing youth organization called Chicago Lincoln Park Juniors Rowing Club. Mm-hmm. it taught me a lot of, and when the former mayor, Rahm Emanuel, gave me a medal, he decided to name Polly's Pals after me.
Cool.
Yeah, that was an adaptive rowing program. And yeah, that gave you the courage to try out for football. And it taught you what it was, the feeling of what it was like to be on a team. And I love those coaches in rowing because they figured out how to accommodate you. And you were the first rower with autism they'd had. And what they did was they didn't have anybody sitting in front of Polly.
Ah.
So they had a crew with five people instead of six. And that really, really helped them.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. New, right? Mm-hmm. It's just a trial and error. You know, they just kept trying things until something worked. And
I imagine how many coaches that you influenced and taught, you know, just experiencing people with disabilities and having them on their team or play in with their sport. And then you go on to author a book, My Friend's Autism, which it was a great read. Can you talk about how you decided that you wanted to do something like that?
I talk about the writing process. It was like, the writing process for me, had been, some face challenges, others were easier than others, it was, the writing process took a long time for me.
Right.
I had to think a lot.
Yeah, it was very challenging. It was about a year of just discussing things. This is what he did when he was in college, too, online. Lake Tahoe Community College was a brilliant school for him for many reasons. And so he would kind of remember things, and I would jot them down. And then about a year later, we had come up with it. But it was a long process because looking back was sometimes very difficult emotionally.
Yeah, I'm sure, especially during some of the times that didn't turn out as well. Polly, I'm curious, what was some of your favorite part of the book to write? What was your favorite parts to be able to tell?
To tell, you know, for families who have loved ones with autism or any other intellectual disabilities, and learning differences, from what my experience was growing up and throughout when I got older.
Yeah, that's the main reason. Polly was in between jobs, and we just had a lot of time on our hands. And I thought, you know, when you went to social skills groups all the time, mm-hmm. remember that, Polly? And you would come in and say, I'm sorry, I'm late. I was TPing last night. And everybody's jaw would drop, including the facilitator, the professional. And you ended up talking about your night the entire time. And we went to, what, 3 or 4 different social skills groups. And the same thing happened. The jaws would drop, and you end up telling everybody about your friendships and your life, but then you didn't get anything out of it, so we stopped trying. But I always remembered that because I thought it shouldn't be jaw-dropping. It should mm-hmm. be normal. So I thought, you know, writing a book, Polly has always wanted to help people, and I thought this was in his wheelhouse. It would help a lot of people if he just talked about his successes and what's possible, and maybe it'll inspire others to try and not be afraid.
Did you have a favorite part that you wanted to read or anything? That you wanted to read. Do you have any part of your book that's like one of your favorite things that you'd like to read about?
We don't have the book on us.
Oh, okay.
You know what? I'd love to read for you because we had talked about this. Back in the day, Adam was, the ladies' man. He was the most popular guy with the ladies. And Polly had a crush on a girl.
Aww.
And I said, why don't you call Adam and see what he does? So they talked. And this is what I'll read. I think it's just a page.
Sure.
Page and a half. We wrote this in triple space, so it's easier for people to read. This is called Asking a Girl Out on a Date. I met Sarah in middle school. I asked her out on a date when I was a freshman in high school. Adam, my roommate now, is a ladies' man, and he helped me make that phone call to Sarah. I was a little nervous, but not too much because I knew what I was going to say. Adam helped me with the words. Sarah said no because she wasn't ready to date, but she'd go out with me as a friend, and she wanted to bring a girlfriend with her. But I said no, it's only if it's a date, and then hung up. I was disappointed, but she and I are closer friends now because at least I tried. We go out to lunch once a year with our friend Mikey. My friend Mary told me to call her one time when I was waiting outside with my mom while we were getting a car wash, but I never did. I don't know why I didn't, because she's pretty and fun. That was the only time I asked out a girl. I dated a girl in boarding school and asked Sarah out, and that was it. Right now, I like hanging out with my roommate's girlfriend, Taylor, and her friends, but they're never dates. I'd like to meet someone one day. Maybe I'll meet someone at church. I don't like the idea of online dating.
Uh-huh. Adam, I'm curious because, or not Adam, sorry, Polly, I'm curious because did you feel rejected or anything when Sarah said no, or did you just...
Not really.
You just didn't want to go out unless it was a date.
Yeah, pretty much. I really don't remember. It was so long ago.
I remember like it was yesterday. But I think a lot of times with autism, they have what's called black and white thinking.
Uh-huh.
It's just kind of an all or nothing. And so he just had that in his mind. It was a date. And then she said no to a date, but friends. And he just had that in his mind. It's like when he was young, I told him, I said, you know, you're going to meet a lot of jerks in the world. And when you do, just cross them off your list and move on.
Mm-hmm.
And he did that. Bullies would try to bully him, and he would just look at them and almost visually you could see him crossing them off his list, and he would walk away, and they would just stand there really upset. They're like, wait, it didn't work. So I think that's been kind of a good thing about the autism, that it just kind of makes things very concrete and clear.
Uh-huh. Adam, I don't know why I keep calling you Adam. Polly, Adam, this at least should keep you awake because you hear your name once in a while. Polly, I'm just curious, you talk a little bit about special skills. Do you feel like you have special skills with autism?
The splinter skills.
Yeah. What does that mean?
What skills?
The double squaring.
Yeah.
Oh, double squaring skills.
And the calendar.
Which means I can visualize some mathematics with days of the year and I double square, which means I'd square numbers and I double them.
And it could be a really long number, and he would still do it in half a second.
Yeah, I hadn't really been doing it the last few years because I got annoyed with it.
Aw.
But he also memorized the calendar, and I didn't know this. He used to love to buy calendars, and I thought he liked the pictures. I hope I'm not talking too much, Polly.
Nope. Oh, well, we're okay as long as he is.
Okay, so so I didn't know until he looked at a calendar one day, and he pointed to leap year, the leap year day, the February, what is it, the 29th?
29th, yeah.
And he pointed at it and went, oh. And that's when I realized he'd memorized the calendar. So if he was comfortable with someone like Mrs. White, his principal at Summit School, which was a great school out in Elgin, Illinois, and Mrs. White would say, what day will my birthday be on when I'm 71? So he knew her birthday, he knew her age, and he would just look at her and go, Friday. Like, wow. He could do that with anyone. And there was a man who he was chatting with at a community pool, and I didn't even know this, but then a year later he went up to him and said, oh, your birthday is October 7th. And the man was like, what? Like, he just was shocked. So, you know, it was a great icebreaker when Polly first went to public school.
Because I think I heard someone saying, because I think I heard other people talking. Mm-hmm. And they mentioned their birthdays to other people, and that's when I realized, kind of thing.
It's how to connect with people.
Mm-hmm.
Connect with people.
Yeah, that's how Jack Scales connected with you. He wrote a big part of the book. He was Polly's very first neurotypical friend, and he was fascinated. When Polly first came into public school, and he would say, somebody would say, my birthday is, you know, April 7th, 1999. And he would say, oh, you were born on a Wednesday.
Wow. And
that's how he was introduced to the class. And they all thought that was really cool.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah. And so that was a really great icebreaker, that splinter skill. And it really helped him become friends with Jack, because Jack just was fascinated. And then Jack writes in the book also that the thing he liked about Polly was that Polly would always ask him questions about himself. He said, all my other friends were into sports. And he said, Polly would come up to me and ask questions about myself. And then I would say something, and like, he liked the Jets. And so Polly would go home and do a little research about the Jets and come back the next day and talk about the Jets and tell him something. So I think that's a really good thing to learn for anybody with or without autism.
Right.
That's a really great, if you have
how to take an interest in someone else. Yes.
You can ask other people about themselves, and that's, you know, 80% of the battle right there.
Polly, in your book, you talk about, you know, possible that, you know, people, I kind of equate it to any disability, but people with autism, you know, who have a harder time being social, that can also be more lonely. Did you feel more lonely growing up?
Sometimes I did. but it didn't really matter to me.
I don't think that's true, but I think you were very lonely at one point, and then you met Jack, and then you met all your friends, and I don't think you remember that time because of it, but in elementary school, you were pretty lonely. Yeah.
When I went to Washington the other half of the day.
Yeah. That was great when the principal, she didn't make us sign any forms. She didn't have any meetings. She said, oh, Polly can come in during math and during recess. And she just let him come. The taxi from the school that he went to during the day just dropped him off at the public school. And she couldn't have made it easier. I mean, that really, really broadened his horizons socially. That was great. And that was his idea, because we would walk around the playground where the school was, and he would look at the kids and they would look at him, and he's like, I want to go over there. And I said, okay, well, we'll just call. And we got extremely lucky.
Yeah.
She said, okay, we'll just set it up.
Polly, what was the hardest part of the book to talk about?
The hardest book to talk about was about advocating for others, basically.
Why do you feel like that was so hard?
It was hard for me because I just had to share a lot of story details about myself, and to show other people that being different doesn't mean you're a bad person.
You had to really put yourself out there.
What?
You had to really put yourself out there. You had to really open up and talk about yourself.
Yeah.
Which I think is sometimes hard to do, especially in the hard parts where you're not as happy about or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's always the reluctant leader. When he interned for a federal legislator, he was the only one, and he was the first one. When he was rowing, he was the first person with autism doing that. I mean, and so he's always had to tell people what he needs and what works, what doesn't work, and that's a lot of work.
Yeah. Well, and I'm wondering, I mean, so also, Cindy, you as a mom, I really admire how much you did. I think, you know, at one point you said you realized you had to be one of those moms that jumped in and made every effort to give Polly as much social opportunities as possible. And I'm well aware that you would have had to open yourself up a lot too. And pave the way and kind of do all of that. That meant, I would think, giving up a part of yourself and saying, this is what I'm going to do. And I'm going to make every effort to make it the best I can for my kids. And, you know, I think parents, when they're raising kids in the best of times, give up parts of themselves because they have to. That's just how it is. But I feel like when you raise children in a situation where they're both very different and one needs more care and more socializing, there's a huge part that you have to let go of or change.
Yeah, I have the perfect response to that. I was always with Polly and his friends.
Mm.
When Polly was in college, I missed his friends.
Aww.
They spend a lot of time with adults.
Yeah.
And I always tried to be in the background and shadow, but he needed me there. And sometimes the guys would be like, why are you here? Why are you always bugging us? Why are you here? You know, and sometimes I would leave and then something funky would happen. I'd come back like, this is why I'm here. So, yeah, I was always, always driving a lot of kids around, and I loved them. I had the best time. I was a mom. When I was 37, I had Polly. And so I was mature and I was ready. And I've loved every second of it. I love being Polly and Jay's mom. I never feel like, because I had a career and I had a life and I was ready. And so mm-hmm. I never felt like I was sacrificing. I just felt like they were enhancing my life. Mm. But the weird part was spending so much time with his friends. I mean, because I would hear all these things. Remember, Adam?
Right.
Yeah.
Adam and I talked about this when he was in high school. I remember that clearly.
Things that
now.
The parents wouldn't usually hear, but you were privileged enough
to
get
hear
to do that.
And Adam had told me, I said, you know, I have a Chinese wall. Everything you guys talk about, I don't say. And he said, that's what I really admire about you, Mrs. Montgomery, that you're not one of those moms that talks about. Do you remember that, Adam?
I do remember that. You were one of us, you know, especially with Pauly. With Pauly being Pauly, you were always around. And I think it kind of gave him a sense of belonging. It was kind of like a blanket of security having you around, especially with us friends, too. It was like we have the cool mom around, so it kind of gave us a little leverage on what we can do and kind of get away with murder at some point. But yeah, it was good to have you around for sure.
Really quick before we go into your guys' friendship, Adam, Pauly, can you tell me, you use the term in-betweener a lot in the book. What does that mean to you?
In-betweener means like, in between special ed and regular ed, which means in some skills I'm more advanced, in other skills I'm not as nearly advanced. And also teaches me a lot to what it means to be an in-betweener, me and my buddy Matt DeLacy, who's 3 years older, he's an in-betweener as well, because he'd been a guinea pig his whole life too. Basically.
Can I add something, Pauly? Are you done? I don't mean to interrupt.
Sure. You want to talk about Matt a little bit?
No, but I want to talk about when you were a fellow at Cape Youth.
Oh, yeah.
You spoke to the state legislators and educational leaders and administrators across the country, and that was your presentation. It was called In-Betweeners.
Yeah.
And when I think of in-betweeners, I think of that you don't go to the programs. There's a lot of nonprofits that have programs for people with autism. Mm-hmm. And Pauly's never, ever, ever wanted to go to any of them. They're just not interesting to him. But then a lot of times he can't be involved in other things because he needs more accommodations than they're able to give. And so there's a lot of people out there that are in-betweeners that need accommodations to be in a regular setting. And there's it's something that's very important that everybody should be aware of. Anybody that's involved in a nonprofit or a school or a policymaker needs to be aware that there is such a need for regular activities to allow for more accommodations for in-betweeners.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the football was perfect. The football freshman year, those coaches just did it naturally. But a lot of other activities and places, they weren't ready. And I think that would be a really great thing to have some kind of a training to teach the people involved in leading the programs of how to incorporate in-betweeners.
Uh-huh.
Pauly, talk about how you met Adam.
Well, I actually met Adam through baseball. When he and I played baseball together on a youth league called Park Ridge Warriors. Since he and I went to different middle schools, I went to Lincoln and he went to Emerson. So a couple of my friends and his friends, had known each other from playing sports, and I met Adam in seventh grade, we were on the A team under Coach Tui, whose son Danny, who we call Diesel, was in our grade, and in our our team, and Coach Tui gave me a baseball at the end of the game to welcome me on board of the team.
Cool. Adam, do I presume correctly that you do not have autism?
I do not, no.
So can you talk a little bit about this relationship? Because you guys are roommates now. So how did you have to go through any kind of a little bit to discussion on how to make this roommates can be tough and the best of circumstances? So talk a little bit about how you guys make this work.
Yeah. So Mrs. Montgomery, she presented the opportunity for me. You know, Paulie was coming back from Kentucky, and she put me and a couple other kids in a group chat and was like, hey, you know, Paulie's back from college. We would really like it if any of you guys would want to live with Paulie, because I know Paulie said that I was one of the kids that he would feel comfortable living with. Mm-hmm. And I was in a time in my life where I needed an opportunity like that. You know, I wanted to get away from home. I wanted to figure out, just kind of live on my own. And the Montgomerys.
You happen to be the winner.
Exactly. So the Montgomerys presented me with that opportunity. Mm. And, you know, since knowing Paulie from 7th and 8th grade in high school, I never looked at him any differently.
Right.
So I never looked at this as a difficult task. I always just thought it was, you know, it's Paulie, you know, he's my friend from middle school and high school. So there's really nothing I should be looking out for. I think there's been a lot of accommodations that I've had. I've learned a lot since living with Paulie firsthand. Living with someone, you know, with a learning disability, it hasn't been the easiest, but it's been a very good experience for both of us.
Mm-hmm.
I think people look at our relationship as, I know Mrs. Montgomery calls it neurotypical. I think a lot of people may look at it as I'm the one who Paulie is learning from, but I think it goes hand in hand. I think I'm learning a lot from Paulie. I think I've learned a lot about growing up when it comes to living with someone who's neurodivergent. And it's been quite the experience, and it's been an experience that I truly am grateful for. I think Paulie has helped me grow up. I think Paulie has helped me learn a lot of things, and I think I've got to see Paulie through a different lens as being his roommate. I've got to understand, you know, the Montgomerys more too about how it was like raising Paulie and stuff like that. And at the end of the day, you know, I consider him my brother. I don't look at him any differently. I think this has truly been one of the most eye-opening experiences that I've ever had. And I think living with Paulie has been truly a blessing, honestly, at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Thank you, Adam. What about you, Paulie? How has it been for you?
Living with Adam, has taught me. We've taught each other a lot more things since we, you know, graduated high school and college, and living together we've learned a lot about each other more often. Just on the fact that that I was going through a lot and he was too, especially me. Having a learning disability, he wasn't an IEP student like I was. When he asked me when I would squeeze my nose, I told him that I had a stim to help me relieve from stress. It was difficult at first, but you know, he got used to it overall. You know, we talked a little bit about our families and friends we had before. One of our friends, another friend of ours, Mikey Nicholson, who was in our grade and about our age too. He's also on the spectrum as well, like me. You want to talk about Mikey a little bit?
Yeah. So me and Paulie have a mutual friend. His name is Mikey, And we went to, Mikey went to Emerson Middle School, which was my middle school. Paulie went to Lincoln. And we all went to Maine South, which was our high school. So it was just a pool of mutual friends. And Mikey's he's another very bright kid. Mikey's very smart. Mikey's quite the character. And, you know, Paulie has Mikey over, and we all sit around and, you know, we watch our movies. I think movies has been a big topic and a big interest in all of our lives. So I think movies are one of the ways that we can actually come together. And I know Mikey's very big into movies. Paulie's really big into movies. So that's another interest we have that kind of breaks that barrier of neurodivergent and neurotypical people. So I think going back to the whole sports thing, I think when people share a common interest, I think it kind of makes people relate and, you know, it breaks down that barrier and creates a sense of belonging for everyone. So yeah, Mikey's a good kid. Shout out to Mikey.
Paulie, what do you want people to get out of your book?
Well, I want people to get out of my book that being different, you don't have to be afraid or hide in the closet forever. You can read this book and you can learn a lot through me, what I went through, and you can for parents out there that have kids who are struggling with socializing with their from their peers.
Mm-hmm. Cindy, do you have a thoughts of what you would like people to take away from this story?
Oh, there's so many, but the one that is in the front of my mind, because we've been talking about it, is from Judy Tui. And she said in the book that she was really impressed with all I did to put Paulie out there, that as a mom, if it had been her, she would have been tempted just to play it safe and, you know, not really go out. And I think that's important for the parents, is to go out there and let kids fail, because they need to learn how to fail. There was a speaker with autism long, long time ago, and he said his mom and dad protected him so much he never learned how to fail. And
right.
That's the one thing that he really wished he'd had more practice with. So that's really important, to get out there and just try. And there's another one, but I forgot it. Having a senior moment.
Well, and I can see the benefit of that, because when they fail, they're home, right? They can still come to you and cry on your shoulder, so to speak. So you're there to pick them up after they failed. But in the real cruel world, if that's their first time, that's an awful hard fall.
Yeah.
Where can people get this book?
Well, Amazon has the paperback and the hardcover and the audiobook on Audible. And then there's a lot of places to get the audiobook. The narrator is autistic, and he did a fabulous job. He loved the book, by the way.
Cool.
And it's on, like, Barnes & Noble and the Walmart one and Spotify. There's, like, a whole list. I can't remember.
The narrator is autistic, though, huh? That's cool.
Yeah, the audiobook is really... really great.
I
think that's
what he reads it well. He reads it well. The book is called My Friend's Autism. How did you decide on the name?
Well, I think we decided on the name because you know, I had a lot of friends, and when they got to know me, they didn't really see me being autistic. They saw me, you know, being a normal person. With being like as all the others. We also kind of did this just to let people know who has autism and who doesn't, and everybody could get along as they grow older.
Mm.
I know what I was going to say really quickly. Can I say?
Yeah.
I always prioritized his social life over his academic life. Always.
Yeah.
That was very important.
Uh-huh.
It's tough to make friends when you're adults, but it's easy for kids. And I thought you could do the academics later.
Yeah.
Right. Thank you guys very much for being on. I really appreciate it. And it's been great, and good luck. Best of luck with the book. And Polly, rock on. Keep on learning.
Okay, thank you. What's your name again?
Sam.
Sam, okay. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Okay, well, thank you guys again, and I appreciate your time. This has been Disability and Progress. The views expressed on the show are not necessarily those of KFAI or its board of directors. My name is Sam. I'm the host of the show. Thanks so much for tuning in. Charlene Dahl is my research person. And Aaron is my podcaster. This is KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis and KFAI.org. If you want to be on my email list, you can email me at disabilityandprogress@samjasmine.com. And I wish everybody good health coming up, and tune in next week.
KFAI.org.